series on Vedanta philosophy for 21st century.
सदाशिवं निर्मलज्ञानदातारं वन्दे देशिकविग्रहं जनिभृतिमृतिहेतुर्यस्य विश्वस्य नित्यम् अमृतजडविरोधी शाश्वतोऽनन्तरूपः श्रवणमनयोग्यो जीवरूपातभिन्नो वितरतु नैहित्यं शङ्करोऽयं यतीन्द्रः वितरतु नैहित्यं शङ्करोऽयं यतीन्द्रः भद्रं कर्णेभिश्वमुनाः भद्रं पश्येमाक्षधृयस्तुष्टुवाग्निशस्तन्नशेवाङ्गेवरितं जरायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवास्ति नूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तार्क्षो यरिष्ठनेमिः स्वस्ति नोरस्तदधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
फ्रेंड्स Last time we discussed the problem of unitary consciousness, which is the ideal of Vedanta, the purpose for which the whole Vedantic science has been developed. While describing the goal, necessarily we have to point out certain steps. While discussing those steps, those of you who were present must have noticed that it is the mind which has to perceive that unitary consciousness. It is a strange thing to go beyond the mind. We have to depend upon the mind. It is something like this. If we want to be unconscious about our physical apparatus, that is body, we must keep it in a fit condition. If body is healthy, then you forget about the body and can move along to the greater heights of thoughts. But if your body is not cooperating, if it is ill, then you are continuously burdened with the thoughts concerning the body. Rarely we think of our head or the stomach. But once you have a headache, once you have a stomachache, you are forced to continuously direct your attention towards your head or towards your stomach. Similarly, to go to the great heights of spiritual life, you have to forget your mind. You have to transcend it. But you can only transcend it if your mind is be in a healthy state, then you forget about your mind. But if your mind is sickly, if your mind is not really healthy, then it continuously bothers you. I want to point it out because many times people see that just because we have to transcend our mind, we can forget our mind. We have to forget our mind, but that is only after mind has been cultured. That is why after telling you about the final destiny that Vedanta wants us to take to, we are taking up the problem of mental culture, the state of mind which must be developed to perceive, to realize, to comprehend, to absorb, so that universal consciousness, that unitary consciousness becomes part and parcel of our every moment of living. Culture basically comes from a root, tolerate, which is really the past participle form of that particular root, and it means till, because the root tolerate means to till. You can think of that word very easily if you remember the word agriculture. The word culture is present there. You till the land. When you till the land, what is it that you are really trying to do? You are making the ground ready to receive the seeds so that they can sprout into the plant. That is what basically you mean by tilling the land. Just as we till the land, we have to till our mind. It is only then that mind gets cultured. Therefore, the word culture implies care, or what we can say by the word cultivation. It is the same word, cultivation, culture. So when we say that a thing has to be cultivated, what we mean is that the thing needs to be cared for. Now that is a thing to be remembered in modern times, because continuously we are talking about national culture, social culture, regional cultures, religious culture, and so on. Unfortunately, we forget the word culture. We think culture is something which is existing there in the outside world. We take culture to be a passive thing present always. Culture is not something which is present outside. It is something which has to be cultivated continuously. Just as I often point out, dharma is not in books. Kriyamanam hi dharma bhavati. The great wise people laid down that dharma is that which is practiced. You may have any number of essays and articles in your library discussing about the qualities, the results of truth. But all that may show deceptions about truth, it is not going to give you an iota of virtue, the punya in you, unless you start speaking the truth, unless you practice it. Dharma is something to be practiced. It is true that to practice a thing you have to know it. But mere knowledge of dharma leads you nowhere. Because dharma does not come into existence until it is practiced. It is something like this. You may have a textbook telling you how to make water. You take hydrogen, you take oxygen, you pass an amount of electricity and water is created. But no matter how much you know about it, are you going to get a drop of water by this knowledge? Unless you can take hydrogen, oxygen, put together and pass the electricity. Knowledge is necessary, but water cannot be available until you are able to produce water, then only it will be helpful to you. Similarly, you may know everything about dharma, but if you do not practice it, you will not get any virtue out of it, you will not get any benefit out of it until it is practiced. Similarly, culture is not existing there outside. There is no such thing as national culture or religious culture. It is something which has to be cultivated all the time. Perhaps some of you may have good lawns in your houses. You go out to Shimla or Masuri during the summer and come back after 2 months. Naturally, the servants are not so conscious about the lawns. So when you come back, you find that lots of weeds have grown. It has not been watered properly. You have to scold your gardener, your mallik, and then again work hard so that the lawn becomes really a good lawn. Lawn is not existing there. It has to be cultivated every day. Then only it will remain a lawn. Similarly, national culture is not something existing out there. You have to continuously grow it. You have to continuously kill people so that the national culture will remain. Even if you miss for a few years, as we have been doing for the last 40 years, you are not killing the national culture. You are thinking that national culture is existing there, it does not need continuous tending. The result is, we find everywhere culture degenerating. Same thing is true of religious culture, of social culture, of all the different aspects of culture. So we must know what we want to develop and then continuously develop it into our lives. Then only the culture, that is the development, takes place, refinement takes place, improvement takes place. Slowly refinement has to come. in our life, nationally, socially, religiously. We are going to discuss particularly how to cultivate, how to till our mind. Because the main topic is not merely culture but mental culture. Once mind is cultivated, our emotions are improved. What gives life a savor, a taste, is not merely the intellectual comprehension about things, but how we emotionally feel about it. Is not out of intellectual perception, but it is out of emotional attachment to that particular idea or that particular reality. So mental culture means not only the improvement of our intellectual faculty of analyzing and synthesizing, but it is also refinement and development of our emotions, so that life becomes full of joy. The interests of life also have to be tilled. Most of the time, we are interested in very gross things. As the Kathopanishad points out, a person is always presented with that which is good and that which is pleasurable. Shreyascha prayascha manushya netah tai samparitya vivinakti dhira. Continuously in our life, we are presented with two alternatives. One alternative is that which is good. That goodness, the interest for a good cause, for a good purpose, for a good goal, has to be cultivated. The gross interests are always existing there, so our interests also have to be cultivated. Even our manners have to be cultivated. Most of the time, the manner of our activity is extremely gross. The way we talk, the way we dress, the way we express ourselves, in untimely ways of things, we are continuously presenting the grosser side of our life and not the refined, the cultured aspect of our life. Once mind is cultured, it is not only the ways of our thinking that change, it is not merely the feelings that change, but our talking, our acting, every step that we take is a changed step. Culture, man, can be noticed from every action. Culture is not something which has to be just, it can be perceived directly. Because it includes your whole personality. Eventually when mind becomes attuned to unitary consciousness, the mind is able to reach that which is beyond mind. The Maitrayani Upanishad on which we are going to base this discussion belongs to the Samaveda recension. It enunciates the whole concept of mental culture in a very short and precise way. So we will take this particular Upanishad, the particular passages which deal with the mental culture. At the very start, at the very beginning, Upanishad lays down what it wants to tell us. Atreya Shloka Bhavanti, the Upanishad says that about mental culture, you have these particular mantras. Yatha Narindhano Vanni, Swayurmal Pashandati, Tatha Vrtti Kshayat Chittam, Swayurmal Pashandati. It lays down the goal. You light a fire, the law of wood burns. But once the log of wood has burnt away, yatha nirindhana, there is no more supply of wood to that particular fire. What happens to the fire? Having burnt that log of wood, what happens to the fire? It goes to its own root, Swayamam Upashamyati. Fire is present everywhere. Another Upanishad of the Krishna Yajurveda says that fire is present everywhere. It is not manifest fire, we have to manifest it. So the fire which is present everywhere is manifested in a particular way. It is manifested in Indhana, log of wood. And once it has finished, burnt away that log of wood, it goes back to that all-pervasive fire. It has not gone away anywhere. To put it in a modern scientific way, we can say that energy is present everywhere. Energy gets concentrated whenever the matter is present. Once the matter is dissolved into energy, it again becomes all-pervasive. This is what happens when we explode atom. The atom is changed into energy. Energy pervades the whole universe. The energy is never lost. Indestructibility of energy is accepted by modern science. Energy gets dissipated but not destroyed. Similarly, whenever the mind is present, consciousness is expressed there. Just as matter is there, the energy is expressed. Without matter, the energy cannot be expressed. But once the matter is dissolved into energy, once it is dissipated into energy, it becomes all pervasive and therefore unmanifest, but it has not been lost. Similarly, consciousness needs mind to express itself. Without mind, consciousness, though present everywhere, cannot express itself. It is not manifest. It manifests itself into the mind. But once it has exhausted all that exists in the mind, tatha vritti kshayachittam, when all its modifications, that is the vrittis, have been changed into energy, it is absorbed back into that eternal consciousness. This is the yoga. What are you trying to attain through mental culture? We are trying to build the mind in a way that it expresses itself out and only the unitary consciousness remains. Unitary consciousness is not something which is achieved by the mind, but it is attained through the mind. Just as energy is present everywhere, in the matter it is expressed. Once the matter has dissolved itself, has dissipated itself into energy, it is no more expressed, that is all. Energy was present all along. Similarly, the eternal unitary consciousness is present everywhere. In the presence of mind, it becomes manifest. Once the mind has exhausted itself completely, the mind, so to say, gets absorbed into its origin, that is unitary consciousness. Tatha vritti kshayachittam svayena vipashamyati. This is the ideal that we have to go. The Upanishad goes on to assert that this world is nothing, but what is perceived through the mind. Chittameva hi samsarah tatrayatmena shobhaye yachittastanmayo bhavate guhyame tatsanatanam. The world is our mental perception of the absolutely real, that is Shiva. Actually, there is nothing what we can call matter, energy, or anything in the world. Whatever is perceived is really only the Brahman, the absolutely real. It is that which we are perceiving all the time. But because we are perceiving it through the limitations of the mind, we perceive things in a limited way. And when we perceive it in a limited way, our perception is perception of the world. It is something like this. We go to the Himalayas. It is a big mountain range. Our eyes can see only a small patch, a small region of that particular mountain, the Himalayas. Our idea about it is extremely limited, because our eyes cannot perceive more than a particular range. Given that range, only perception takes place. You have all heard, I did not repeat the famous story, how the four blind men go and try to find out what an elephant is. Each one of them has some idea about the elephant, but none of them really perceives what the elephant is. One who touches the trunk thinks this is the elephant. One who touches the legs thinks this is the elephant. One who touches the tail thinks this is the elephant. One who touches the stomach thinks this is the elephant. All of them are talking about the elephant, but none of them have perceived the elephant as elephant is. Similarly, when we look at the Himalayas, different people will come back. Different reports of the Himalayas. None of them is lying. They are all telling the truth. But none of them have been able to perceive Himalayas in its totality. Similarly, our mind, again, is extremely limited. So all our perceptions of the world, all our conceptions of the world are based on the observations of the mind. So whether it is the perceived world or the conceived world, it is only our mental perception. Out there is nothing but them, absolutely real as it is. The scriptures say, even though there is only one invisible whole present everywhere, but because our senses are limited, we are able to see only a particular chunk of it. Put it in a different way, you see a human being or an animal for that matter, but supposing we had eyes which could see an X-ray plate, just as our eyes see within certain limits, it was quite possible that our eyes were able to see like an X-ray. Our conception of the world would be entirely different. We would see people only as structure of bones. You must have seen the Finnish people have a certain vision. When they listen with that particular vision, the Finnish dog is able to hear it and come immediately. But we can't hear it, because it is beyond the range of our auditory perception. All this comes out how our perceptions and conceptions of the world are limited by our mind. So the Upanishad says, chittam yoga hi sansara. It is only our mental perception our mental conception that we know. And therefore, tat pravartmana sohi. Those perceptions, that particular apparatus mind has to be cultured, shobhaye. It has to be purified. It has to be made proper instrument to observe absolutely real as he is. And for that, the Upanishad points out tat pravartmana sohi. You have to work hard to cultivate it. Unless we are able to culture our mind, we will never be able to perceive that unitary consciousness that we talked about last time. Prayatna is very important, because Upanishad does not merely say yatna, it says prayatna. Yatna means an effort. Prayatna is something more than an effort. It is when you give your whole being to a particular way of achieving things, then only you can call it prayatna. To cultivate mind, we have to give ourselves entirely to this goal. It is not possible that half a day you do all uncultured activities. We will discuss the uncultured activities. But very simple uncultured activities: to speak in life. Now that is an uncultured activity. Someone has come to meet you. You are busy. You don't want to meet him. But you laugh loudly, welcome him loudly. Oh, I am so happy that you have come. All the time feeling that he has come on the wrong day. Tomorrow you have to file your income tax return. And now this man is going to take over 4 hours. And it is going to be very difficult to get rid of him. Now this is what an uncultured person does. To speak in life. The moment someone is weaker than you, he may be an intellectually weaker person. Therefore he may be asking some question which is very irrelevant. You try to show how intellectual you are by letting him down, to make him feel how foolish he is. You are expressing your aggressiveness. Now that is what an uncultured person will do. He looked down at us. It may be intellectual superiority. It may be financial superiority. You may be having more wealth. So if the person is talking about a watch, which he has bought from the Titan, you make it a point to make him feel that the Swiss watches are really the good watches and these watches are useless. Knowing very well that that man is not having enough financial resources to buy that particular watch. So you are just trying to smug him down financially. So whether it is intellectual superiority, whether it is financial superiority, or in our Indian context, it may be even your superiority due to the accident of birth. You might have been born in a family whose great-grandfather or grandfather work for Indian independence. So you try to make all others feel your grandfather and great grandfather did not work for the independence of India, so I am a superior person. So it may be accident of birth. But all these activities are uncultural activities. A cultured person has developed his mind where he will never let another person down. In the most controversial stages, Acharya Shankara never tries to corner a person. He answers him, but gives him the proper coordinate to develop himself, not just to let him down. Nandan Mishra was a great scholar of Vedic lore, but he was continuously given to ritualistic part of the Vedic religion. Acharya Shankara wanted to convert him to the higher. Rituals are all right. They are also part of our mental culture. But unless rituals are given to the higher goal of dedicating them as an offering to God, those rituals are not able to take you to the highest stage of life. We can put it in a different way. Just as I said a few moments ago, someone has come to meet you and you are busy. Now, the way you are talking with him, I am so glad to meet you, can also be taught by a cultured person. The difference will be that he has motivated himself in such a way that he says, supposing I got children today, or I got an intense colic pain today, what would have happened? I could not have worked for 4 hours or 2 hours or whatever it is. It may be even the whole night. If the colic pain continues, I would not have been able to work. So just because this person has come, it does not mean that he has disturbed my program. Anything else could have disturbed my program. Now here is a person who is a living being with feelings, with emotions. So I am not merely telling him that I am happy to see you, but I have motivated myself. I may die the next moment, but this expression of love presented between us, which brings out the unitary consciousness, is more important than any financial profits or losses that I may suffer. So when he says, I am glad to meet you, he means it. If a person has come to meet you, you meet him joyously. This is a ritual. But if this ritual can be dressed up so that it is no more a ritual, but an offering to a living being, you are offering your 2 hours or 4 hours to that living being because God is present in him, then that ritual has gone to a higher level. Similarly, all our rituals can be performed as rituals as our duties, but they can also be performed as an offering to the Supreme Godhead. So that Shiva may be pleased. Acharya Shankara points out at the very beginning of his Gita Bhashya,